Good afternoon, and thank you all for joining the Scientific Methods Panel Subgroup Number 4 Primary Measure Evaluation Conference Call. My name is Miranda Barra with NQF, and we'll begin today's call with some brief housekeeping remarks before diving into the measure discussion. So to begin, a discussion guide was sent to subgroup members on Monday morning. This document will guide today's measure discussions and follow the order presented on that document. Consensus was not reached for the first 9 measures, and we will be focusing our time on those measures during our call today. All other measures will not be discussed unless a member of the subgroup would like to pull a measure. If the subgroup chooses not to discuss any additional measures, the decisions from your preliminary analysis will be final. And at the end of today's call, we will ask subgroup members if they would like to pull a measure for discussion. And that same email that went out Monday morning containing the discussion was also a link to a SurveyMonkey. We ask our subgroup members to please pull up that email and cast your votes as we talk through each measure. And staff will prompt you to cast your votes when timing is appropriate. In the same vein of timing, it is limited on today's call, and due to the number of measures we have slated for discussion, it's likely that we'll continue the discussion during the follow-up meeting scheduled for this Thursday, March 21st, from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And finally, we do want to note that this is a public call. We have developer representatives available to answer questions from staff or from panel members. However, there is no opportunity for public comment. For record-keeping purposes, we ask that subgroup members and developers please state your name each time before you provide any remarks. And with that, I will turn it over to my colleague Andrew Lizinga to conduct a roll call and disclosures of interest.
Thanks, Miranda. Hello, everybody, and welcome. We'll combine our roll call here with a disclosure of interest. I'll just make a few remarks here and try to move through it fairly quickly. You received a disclosure of interest form from us, were named to the committee, and annually thereafter, and you receive a measure-specific disclosure of interest with each measure review cycle, and that asks you about your relationship to any measures under review or any related or competing measures that we've identified. Between these two forms, we asked you a number of questions about your professional activities and the degree of your involvement with any measures under review. In the interest of transparency, today we'll ask you to orally disclose any information you provided on those forms that you believe is relevant to this committee, and specifically the measures you reviewed as a member of this subgroup and any related or competing measures. We don't need a summary of your resume. We're really just interested in especially interested in grants, research, or consulting, measure development activities related to the measures under review by this group. You reviewed 12 measures this cycle. I'll try to quickly go through those just to remind you. Those measures are 0138, NHSN catheter-associated urinary tract infection outcome measure, 0139, NHSN central line associated bloodstream infection outcome measure, 0141 patient fall rate, 0202 falls with injury, 3501 hospital harm opioid related adverse events, 3502 hybrid hospital wide risk standardized mortality measure, 3503 hospital harm severe hypoglycemia, 3498E, hospital harm pressure injury, 3516, percent of patients or residents experiencing one or more falls with major injury, 3504, claims only hospital-wide risk standardized mortality measure, 3493, risk standardized complication rate following elective primary total hip arthroplasty, and or total knee arthroplasty for MIPS eligible clinicians and eligible clinician groups. And finally, 3494, hospital 90-day all-cause risk standardized mortality rate following CABG surgery. You've heard this before, but I have just a few reminders. You sit on this group as an individual. You don't represent the interests of your employer or anyone who may have nominated you for this committee. We're interested in your disclosures of both paid and unpaid activities that are relevant to the work in front of you. Finally, just because you disclose does not mean that you have a conflict of interest. We do oral disclosures in the spirit of openness and transparency. So with that, I will call each of our subgroup members' names. Please state your name and if you have anything to disclose. Matt Austin.
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Matt Austin. The only disclosure I would offer is I am part of a broad technically advisory group that the hospital harm measure developers have reached out to from time to time for input and feedback.
Okay, thank you. Lacey Fabian.
Hi, Lacey Fabian. So had missed the 3516% of patients or residents experiencing one or more falls with major injury on the disclosure, but went back and gave the disclosure for that measure. So I'm not providing any review for that one, given my work at MITRE. We had provided consulting support of that group within CMS who ultimately uses that measure and works with measure developers.
Okay. Thank you. Larry Glantz. Larry, are you on? You may be on mute if you are. We'll go to Gene Nuccio.
Yes, hi. I'm Eugene Nuccio. I formerly was part of the home health quality reporting program, measure development and maintenance system, and I have no direct involvement in any of the measures here. However, I was aware of the work done for the impact measure from the SNF and LTC and IRF program, but I was not part of that effort.
Okay, thank you. Michael Stoto.
Hi, everyone. It's Mike Stoto here. I don't have any relationships with any of the measures.
Okay. Thank you. Just want to check again. Larry, are you on? I thought I might have heard Larry earlier on the call, but maybe I was mistaken. Is that Larry Glantz who just joined us by any chance? Sounds like that. Okay. Well, thank you all. I'd like to remind you that if you believe that you might have a conflict of interest at any time during this meeting, please do speak up. You can do so in real time during this call, or you can send a message via chat or email to anyone on the NQS staff. If you believe that a fellow member may have a conflict of interest or is behaving in a biased manner, you can also point this out during the meeting or send a message to NQS staff. Do you have any questions or anything you'd like to discuss based on the disclosures made today? All right, hearing none, thank you all for your cooperation with that. We'll go ahead and get started with the meeting. As Miranda mentioned, we'll move through these in the order they are listed in the discussion guide. So we will start with measure 0138. This is the NHSN CAUDI measure. This is a maintenance measure. It's a standardized infection ratio of healthcare-associated, catheter-associated urinary tract infections in inpatient care locations except level 2 or level 3 NICUs. We had a consensus not reached decision in our preliminary ratings on both reliability and validity. We did have data element validity testing conducted for the measure. It is NQF policy to allow data element validity testing to serve as a demonstration of data element reliability. I think there may still have been some confusion on this point, so I just sort of wanted to reiterate that. So if that was a concern of any of the members, that, that data element validity had been used for purposes of demonstrating reliability. That's something that we have provided in our guidance to developers that they are allowed to do. So with that said, were there any other concerns about reliability from our panel members? In the submission form, the developers referred to the validity testing section, and we had and they provided some data element validity testing from states that have implemented the measure. Just taking a look, they provided sensitivity, specificity, PPV, and NPV on the data elements, provided the validations indicated a pool mean sensitivity of roughly 88%, specificity of 99%, positive predictive value of 96.9%, and negative predictive value of 96.9%. Do you want to talk about reliability? Again, we had consensus not reached on this criterion, so was the
Andrew,
concern...
This,
sorry, go ahead.
Andrew, this is Gene Nuccio. I did rate this as low, and my objection was that I didn't see the reliability data provided. However, given the position of NQF that validity demonstration for data elements is sufficient, then I'd be happy to change my vote to moderate on this.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much. Any other thoughts or comments on reliability? I think we will still have to re-vote to try to reach consensus or get a new decision on that. Is everybody comfortable taking a re-vote on reliability, or does anybody want to talk about anything else?
Hi, yep. Andrew. This is Ashley. I just had a suggestion of maybe
sure.
having a discussion about validity, since that is the component that would kind of count for reliability, to make sure that there's kind of general agreement that validity assessment is adequate. That might help from having to kind of go back.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. So, yeah, let's go ahead and move to the validity testing then. Or validity overall, rather. We can start with testing. So this is the data element validity testing, again, can apply to both reliability and validity at the data element level. There was some concern that the developer listed data coming from all 50 states, but the testing results were only provided for 5 states. I think that was just, you know, the data does come from all 50 states in the NHSN, as I understand it, but the testing was only conducted by 5 states, so that that's acceptable from our perspective. So I just wanted to sort of clarify that. There was also a note that the data element validity testing was performed only for the numerator data elements, not for factors used in the risk adjustment model. I would also note on this one that the risk adjustment variables are actually not at the patient level for this measure. The risk adjustment is based on the type of unit that the patient is in, so that I think may be the reason that there was not testing done of those data elements. Do you have any additional thoughts or concerns or comments on the validity testing?
Yeah, so this is Matt Austin. The concern I had was NQF's guidance is that if the measure is being re-endorsed, that there needs to be empirical validity testing of the measure score. And I did not see that, nor was a rationale offered for why that wasn't done.
I believe, actually, we don't require measure score level testing necessarily. We do require empirical validity testing of some sort, but that can be done at the data element level. For a maintenance measure, we require empirical testing either at the data element level or at the measure score level over face validity. We don't require face validity for maintenance measure unless the developer has provided a justification or rationale for that that is acceptable to the committee. But data element validity testing will suffice, for, our requirements for a maintenance measure.
This is Lacey Fabian. Not often, since that was my impression as well. So if that's not the case, the requirement, then I can change my assessment.
Okay. There were a couple other concerns, I think, raised beyond just the testing, so I can maybe go over those quickly. Sorry, I lost my place here. So the risk adjustment, there was some, I think, concern of the, the lack of social risk factors included in the risk adjustment model, but the reviewers did note that since patient-level factors aren't collected, it's unclear how the developer could have done that, but they couldn't have really tested that either. There was some concern about that no statistical results, like a C statistic or, of model power were reported for the risk adjustment model. Some other concerns about the testing done for the risk adjustment model. I don't know if we want to talk about that a little bit, about the information provided in support of the risk adjustment. So that may have been Larry that brought that up, and I don't know if Larry has joined us yet. Larry Glantz, are you on? Doesn't sound like it. Does anybody else have any concerns about risk adjustment they want to discuss? All right. Well, the final, I think, point of concern was, sorry, did somebody have something to say about that?
So I didn't know if you were asking for a comment from the developer or from the committee?
I was looking for committee comments. Maybe we can talk about the last concern and then, come back if you have any comments you want to make about that. I think that the last – sorry, go ahead.
This is Gene comment, commenting. Traditionally, the risk adjustment is applied to the score rather than to the data for the provider. And given that there is a kind of a lack of information about how that score differs amongst different providers, I'm a little uncomfortable trying to make a comment about how well the risk model works if you don't have a lot of information about how the score works.
Well, maybe this would be a good time to get a bit of clarification from the developer. Did you have some remarks you'd like to make about the risk adjustment approach and clarifications for our panel members?
This is Mike Soto. While they're getting ready to do that, I just want to add a little bit that that a standardized incidence rate is a kind of risk adjustment, but it's really different from a lot of the ones that we typically see for outcome measures. They do provide the guidance from CDC about how to do SIRs, and they have followed those methods, I think, well. So it may be that it's kind of a different approach than we're used to.
Mm-hmm. Do we still have the developer on? Maybe on mute. know, somebody just spoke up. Did we lose them? All right. Well, I think the final concern, I think, was about the meaningfulness of differences identified by the measure. There was some note that a fairly small proportion of facilities have an opportunity for improvement, roughly 9%, the implication being that around 91% of facilities may not have an opportunity for improvement. Any comments about that from the committee?
I mean, this is Matt Austin. I mean, I personally thought that there is some variation in performance. You know, 13.66% were statistically significant, less than 1.0, and 8.68% were statistically significant, greater than 1.0. So at least 22-ish percent of hospitals are different than the mean. I don't know if there's a magic threshold for what is a meaningful difference.
Yeah, right.
But for me, 22% of hospitals being identified as good or poor performers is something.
Okay. Any other thoughts from the committee on that? Or are we ready to move on? So just to sort of read back what we just talked about, it sounds like there is some comfort with the testing being provided at the data element level and for that testing information to be used to demonstrate reliability at the data element level as well. So is everybody comfortable taking a revote on reliability and validity at this point?
So, yeah, Andrew, this is Matt Awesome, another further question. So if they, and maybe I need to just pull up the algorithm for validity, but if one agrees that the data element validity testing is sufficient, what would one rate validity?
So yeah, I was actually just about to say that moderate is actually the highest eligible rating because they only provided data element validity testing. So that is, I should have mentioned that before. The measure would only be eligible for a high rating if they had, in fact, provided score-level validity testing. And the same with reliability. It's only eligible for a moderate for reliability. And that said, should we go ahead and vote on that?
That's fine.
Okay. While you're doing that, the next measure is very similar. This is the CLABSI measure, outcome measure from the NHSN. And I think we have the same concerns, pretty much identical to the previous one. So I don't know if maybe we could kind of skip over this discussion if everybody is comfortable with your votes on reliability and validity for 0138. We can just go ahead and take a revote on 0139 as well, unless there's anything that anybody does want to discuss about 0139.
Go ahead.
Okay. Find a revote.
Yep. All right. Let's do a revote on that one, too, as well. All right. We can move on then to the next measure.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but earlier you mentioned that you wouldn't be discussing a few measures in this call. Would you be able to let us know which of those measures that would be?
Sure. So 3504, the claims-only hospital-wide risk standardized mortality measure, Those that received a high rating for both reliability and validity, 3493 risk standardized complication rate following elective primary THA or TKA for MIPS eligible clinicians that received a high for reliability and a moderate for high for reliability, moderate for validity, and then 3494 hospital 90-day all-cause risk standardized mortality rate following CABG surgery received a high rating for both reliability and validity. For those three measures, 3504, 3493, and 3494 will not be discussed on this call.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
What about 3516? That was the first one on the agenda list.
It's last on my list here, so we are planning on talking about it, but it's not until the end of our agenda here. Can we move ahead to the next measure then? All right, let's do that. The next measure is measure 0141, patient fall rate. This is all documented falls with or without injury experienced by patients on eligible unit types in a calendar quarter. It's reported as total falls per 1,000 patient days. We had a high / moderate rating for reliability on this one, so I don't think we need to discuss reliability, but for validity, we did have a consensus not reached decision. We had some concern about the testing. Reviewers were not entirely convinced that the analysis provided by the developers was a demonstration of measured validity. They were thinking it may have may demonstrate something more like reliability. Again, just pulling the information up for this one. Did anybody have any comments while I do that?
Yes. So this is Matt Austin. I may have been the one to make that comment, and partly I'm looking to my colleagues on the subcommittee to help educate me, or I'd love to hear their thoughts on whether they thought the testing that was provided did demonstrate validity.
Matt, this is Mike Stoto. I'm totally with you on that. I didn't understand how it worked either.
Okay.
Sorry.
This is Gene. I would concur. I'm a little suspect of the bootstrapping method. In that, depending on how the bootstrapping is done, you could be testing the quality of the bootstrapping rather than the validity of the measure itself.
So do we have the developers on the line for this measure?
Yes, this is Emily Kramer with the University of Kansas. We are the measure developer, and the American Nurses Association is the steward.
Okay, great. Could you maybe give us a little bit of explanation for your method of assessing validity, particularly the bootstrapping approach? Maybe a little bit more detail on that for our panel members?
Sure. So we've tested this several different ways in the past. The last two re-endorsements, we've used this particular method. And the reason for using the bootstrapping is really to create this sort of empirically based distribution that we can use to sort of approximate the true fall rate, because we can't know the true fall rate. And so in order to determine whether or not the reported fall rate mirror what would be a true fall rate, we've used the empirically derived distribution from a bootstrapping technique. So we create sort of this empirical distribution and then rank the hospitals based on that. And then the comparison is how close the rank of the hospital on their fall rate actually matches the bootstrapped. So it's sort of a way for us to simulate a true fall rate and then look at the comparison of the actual fall rate to the true fall rate or the estimated true fall rate. And so that's why we sort of classify it as validity, because we wanted to look at the observed compared to the true fall rates.
So this is Mike Stoto, and I mean, it seems to me like that's an interesting way to look at reliability, but it really doesn't get at validity, for which you need something external to the measure itself. And you just, this to me sounds like a way that says that the measure is, it really gets at validity, it strikes me. You either have to say this can predict something, or this is related to something that we think should predict it, or it's related to other aspects of this concept, things like that.
So we have in the past used some of those methods, and those have come back with I think good scores in the past, and so we just changed to this method recently. So I think there's evidence from other sources that we could potentially provide too, if that helps strengthen the measure. Of course, not in this documentation yet.
I'm not sure if we have much opportunity to get more information at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of have to take the submission as it's provided.
Would there be any possibility to have the person who's coughing mute themselves if they could? Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Matt. Any other thoughts on this method of validity testing? From our other panel members.
I'm sorry, I muted myself. This is Gene Nuccio. Real quick, the stratification that you used, I think, talked about nursing homes and hospitals, but then you had multiple other groups. Could you describe how that all that stuff works together? I'm sorry that I'm not making my question very clear. You said there's nine unit types for stratification. And
yes.
Then your testing was done at the nursing unit and the hospital unit. Are you reporting this at the nursing and hospital unit where the analysis was done, or are you reporting this at the nine subunit level?
So there's actually two versions of the measure. There's one at the unit level, which that's why we've tested on the unit type measure, and that's where the stratification really happens. And the reason for that is because it's all on inpatient nursing units, and so, for example, critical care units are expected to have a much lower fall rate than, for example, med-surg units because the patients are just less mobile on critical care units. So that stratification is meant to make the comparisons within units more valid because they'll be compared to units of the same type. The hospital level measure actually involves a aggregate measure of all the units that are submitting data. So the data we use to test this is from the National Database of Nursing Quality Indicators. It's all submitted at the unit level. So in that hospital level measure, in order to, again, level the playing field, we we use that same stratification and weight it based on standardized scores and weighted by the number of the patient volume in each of those unit types. So a hospital with, for example, six critical care units isn't being compared to a hospital with one critical care unit because their falls would necessarily be lower if they had fewer units that were submitting on med-surg units or rehab units where the fall rate is much higher. So the stratification is used for comparison at that unit level, and then also is kind of the methodology we use to roll it up to that hospital level. The measures are reported through NDNQI at both the unit level and the hospital level using that roll-up technique, that aggregation technique.
And does the stratification take all that into consideration in terms of, I mean, to use the term inappropriately, but conceptually, I think, correct, the case mix of the hospital?
Yes. So it's not a true case mix, but
I recognize
never,
that.
Yes,
the distribution across those 9 units.
Yes. So it would. So we created standardized scores for unit type. So across the entire sample, the standardized score. And so we created these scores for each unit type, and then within that, we would, within each hospital, we weight their hospital score by each unit that submitted data, that unit type score plus or times the patient volume in that unit type. So it would be proportionate to the number and type of patients that are seen at that hospital.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
This is Mike Soto again. Do you report the results by across the different strata? It seems to me that what you said there about how you expect to find greater fall rates in some kind of units than in others is actually a measure of validity that I think is missing.
So you know, we do report at the unit level, and within NDNQI, there's benchmarking by that unit type. And hospitals get each individual unit, a unit type, and then a hospital level.
I mean, is the data in the submission?
Yes.
Where would I find that?
That's a good. You mean the scores of in the submission?
Well, you said earlier that you expected that in certain kind of units, the rates would be higher than others because of the nature of the units. And that I think you said you found that, but I don't see where that is actually reported in the material that you submitted.
Oh, yes. That's a good point. So we do include that in the NQF submissions. They previously have been included as part of the measure information form. We include it to show differences across the units in the main measure information form, haven't included it in the measure testing form here. So yeah, that you wouldn't be able to see that right now based on this document.
This is Matt Austin. I had two other concerns with the validity testing. One was, at least from what I could see, it looks like the validity testing was just done at the hospital level, and yet the measure is specified at both the hospital level and the unit level. Am I misunderstanding that?
The validity testing was done at both, although I'm looking at this and it looks like those are not included here. So, no, I don't think you're missing anything.
The other piece that I was a bit concerned about was in some of the narrative, there was some discussion about risk factors, gait, history of falls, but then there's no risk adjustment in the measure. So I was maybe trying to understand why the decision not to risk adjust, given that there seems to be some risk factors for falling.
So we don't collect data on those risk factors currently. So that's one of the reasons we haven't done the risk adjustment. We haven't tested a model for risk adjusting based on falls. There's a number of models out there. There's also a lot of discussion about what risk factors for falling need to be included and should be included and what ones aren't. And so we haven't come up with a reliable risk adjustment model yet. So those are the two reasons we haven't tested it here.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, any other thoughts on that subject? think there was a little bit of, there was also some lack of clarity on the method of assessing meaningful differences. So, what did they? So the, let's see what they did. They treating the ranked hospital score as an unbiased estimator of the ranked true fall rate, and assuming the hospital's percentile ranked scores are independent with Gaussian or uniform distribution. Two hospitals with true fall rates at the 42.5th and 57.5th percentiles would have hospital scores differing by at least 15 percentile ranks in the same direction in 50% of repeated samples. That sort of, I'm not sure what, if that was the result that, that was that came out of the testing. Could we get a little bit of clarity on that from the developer as well? And how your method of testing meaningful differences and the results?
Sure. Let me make sure I'm looking at the right.
This is Matt Austin. It's section 2.B4.
2B4.
1.1.2. Oh, yeah, so the way that we're treating the ranks would show that depending on their percentile, you would actually see significant differences in hospital scores. They would actually differ within that percentile rank. They would actually have quite a bit of difference, and they would differ by that in at least half of the sample. So we would see it over and over and over that they have that difference of at least 15 percentile ranks. Hospitals that are different actually show up as different. Is that addressing the question?
I think is that satisfactory for our panel members?
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
All right, well, are we ready to re-vote on validity for this one as well?
Andrew, this is Matt. Just to clarify, do we need to vote on reliability as well, or just?
No, we had a passing vote on reliability, so there's no need to vote on that one again, just validity. All right, without hearing no objections, we'll ask you to go ahead and vote on validity, measure 0141, and we'll go ahead and move to measure 0202, which is falls with injury. Had the same kinds of results in terms of our preliminary ratings. We got a high, moderate results for reliability, so no need to discuss that or re-vote on it. For validity, we again got a consensus not reached decision. I believe we had the same kind of concerns here again. Lack of clarity and concern about the method used for assessing validity. Have we talked about that enough from the previous measure? Do we want to have any more discussion about the testing method?
This is Mike. I had pretty much the same concerns about this one as before. But
this is Matt. I have the exact same concerns as the previous measure. So I don't need any better.
Yeah, and this is Gene. Same thing.
Just a quick question, not related perhaps to your what we've been chatting about, but how do you see, and this is a question to the developer, how do you see this measure about falls and perhaps falls with injury being serious falls being related to other measures that are being developed in the post-acute environment, post-acute care environment for the impact measures?
So we have, a few years ago, did a harmonization study on our falls compared to other fall measures in QF, and I think there have been a few more potentially developed since then. One of the key differences is just the denominator. A lot of the numerator definitions are pretty similar, and a lot of the data elements are similar, but the key difference is the denominator. So these are for inpatient fall rates, and we use hospital days because that's the most relevant exposure variable for fall rate. Some post-acute care settings, that's also appropriate. Others, I think they've used things like total patient admissions rather than patient days. In outpatient settings, a lot of times they use patient visits. So I think the primary difference is in that denominator definition. Does that answer the question?
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion, or can we go ahead and vote on this one as well? Hearing no objection, go ahead and vote for measure 0202 on validity. And we will move now to measure 3501E, which is hospital harm, opioid-related adverse events. This is an ECQM, an electronic clinical quality measure. We had a consensus not reached decision in our preliminary rating on both reliability and validity. We had, reliability tested at both the data element and score level. There was some concern about the sample size used in the testing. Some lack of clarity around the methodology used. With respect to the data element testing, some concern about the sensitivity of the opioid administered with date and time data element. Regarding the score level testing, again, some concern about the sample size, which was fairly limited, only 5 hospitals. Let's see. And I think a question I had is I might describe what they described as score level testing as more of a data element testing. I think that may have been raised by our reviewers as well. Any discussion about reliability on this measure? Oh, I'm sorry. I got that mistaken. I was talking about validity testing. For reliability, they did conduct a signal to noise. But again, we had some concern about the size of the testing sample. There's a pretty high median reliability score, 0.95, with a range of 0.86 to 0.96. Again, limited sample size there.
Hi, this is Gene again, and I have to ask this to my fellow committee members or panel members. The measure is limited to the first 24 hours of hospitalization, and I'm not sure how that does or does not perhaps overlap with ED admissions or time. Is there any concern that the 24 hours element is problematic in terms of the scoring. I don't know how this activity happens in hospitals, so I'm just looking for your guidance on that matter.
Yes,
Mike, do you have any thoughts?
This is Matt. Your question again is, how does the measure incorporate the ED?
Well, not only the ED, but it says the measure is limited to the first 24 hours of hospitalization.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I guess I wasn't clear about whether the time clock starts with ED time, or if it's admission to hospital time, and if 24 hours is sufficient time to get a representative piece of information about the use of naloxone.
So this is Matt. I interpreted it as the clock started when the patient was admitted to the hospital, so I changed to inpatient status.
I just want to remind you all that we're the developers. This is Karen Dorsey from Yale Core. We're on the line and happy to clarify if you all would like us to.
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate. Could you clarify that point about the start of that 24-hour period? Or did that emergency department?
So the measure captures all administration of naloxone that happens during the entire period of an inpatient admission, including care that was provided in the emergency department or an observation status if that was then late converted to an inpatient admission. So naloxone is counted everywhere, contiguous outpatient and inpatient locations that are all consumed in an episode of an inpatient admission. The 24-hour piece comes in only in the case that if naloxone is given in the first 24 hours, the specifications require that there was an opioid administered by the hospital prior to the naloxone administration to avoid counting as harms naloxone that's given to reverse overdoses that happened in the community.
Thank you for that clarification.
This is Mike Stoto. Can we come back to the issue about score validity versus data element validity? I'm looking at it again, and I realize that I think, although I didn't pick it up at the time, they do seem to be both like data element rather than score, even though they're distinguished in the measurement in the testing document. Can you explain why the second part of that is a score of validity test, or maybe what you did? And why is the score of validity?
Sorry, that was a question for the developer?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So what we did was perform adjudication in the medical records to confirm that a harm actually occurred, that naloxone was administered to reverse the effects of an opioid that had been administered in the hospital. And so we considered that like the gold standard. Right, so that a medical adjudication of a harm in terms of thinking about patient safety measures. That.
But why is it not data element as opposed to score validity?
Because we were adjudicating the occurrence of the harm. So we think of data element validity as, can you show that naloxone date and time that was extracted from the EHR is the same date and time that you find when you look at the clinical interface? Can you confirm that the opioid medication was administration that's extracted from the EHR is the same one you find when you look at the clinical interface. But this is a clinical judgment that's made to actually confirm that a harm event occurred, that the intent of the measure which was to capture naloxone to reverse opioid administration by hospital staff, was actually met by the electronic specification. So we have a clinical adjudicator looking at the entire medical record, all the information that they're able to look at, and making a determination that, yes, the harm, as you have defined it, did actually occur, not just that the data elements were present and accurate. Does that make sense?
I understand what you did, and I actually think that that's a strong thing to do, but I would call that data element validity, and it's possible to approve it with a moderate level, but which is what I would have.
So I'm just curious in that context, what you guys know, just for our learning, what you all would consider a better test of the validity.
Well, generally,
of
the thing harm for validity is that you have to compare the score across a range of units to some other external measure that you think should be related to it. That's an empirical test of validity, in my understanding. Maybe the other committee members have a different view.
This is Andrew from NQF. That's typically our understanding as well when you're talking about score-level validity testing. You want to see some demonstration that score that's, you know, rather than at the patient level, you know, that at the facility level or whatever level of analysis you're talking about, that sort of rolled up and calculated score is an accurate reflection of quality that's been provided at that facility, which usually, again, entails comparison or correlation of that score with some external measure of you know, that may be related or you know, that you would hypothesize would be related in some way, if that makes sense.
Maybe other kinds of injuries, for instance.
So if you were using that as an example, you would want to see that measures that scored well on this measure also scored well, you know, on a rate of other kinds of injuries or the like.
Okay.
No, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, okay, we appreciate the feedback.
I should note that the data element validity testing, again, is acceptable by our requirements. So it's if the panel does either way, if the panel does accept the results of the data element validity testing, that's sufficient to pass the measure on to the standing committee. Although if we did judge it to have only data element validity testing, the highest eligible rating would be moderate.
This is Junior Chair calling, speaking again. Your approach does not use any kind of risk adjustment, nor any sort of stratification by the location of the type of population served by the hospitals. Could you discuss that again and tell us why you chose not to do any kind of risk adjustment? Because it would seem to me that, you know, the likelihood of hospitals, the prevalence of this would vary quite widely depending on where the hospital is located and this type of typical patient population that's served, especially if you're including any kind of ED administration of the drug.
Sure. So I think we did spell out our rationale in the forms, but I'll just say briefly that for this measure in particular, because we require administration of an opioid in the first 24 hours to count the administration of naloxone as a harm, we do not imagine any need to think about the differences in populations coming through the door. So we basically do not count in the numerator as a harm anyone who's getting naloxone to reverse an opioid that they received or took in the community outside of the hospital, only those administered in the hospital by hospital staff. And so in that instance, when we're only talking about naloxone reversal in reaction to over-administration of opioids in the hospital, there really is no clinical rationale for why some populations would be at greater risk of that harm than others, since it's entirely in control, in the control of the hospital, both the dosing and whether they're administering opioids, but also the degree to which they're monitoring for adverse events before someone gets so severe that they would require naloxone to reverse those effects. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, I'm sorry. I probably missed that detail on the explanation that community-induced opioid use that's then reversed by the naloxone is not in, they're excluded in your calculations.
That's correct, and we assess the accuracy of that in our adjudication. So we confirm by adjudication that the specifications were effectively doing that.
All right. Any more discussion on that point? I know we kind of skipped over reliability. There were, again, some concerns about the sample size used, but the method was appropriate, I believe, and the results provided were fairly strong. Did anybody have any concerns, remaining concerns about reliability? Are we ready to vote on both reliability and validity then?
This is Matt Austin. If I could maybe just bring up an issue on validity.
Sure, of course.
I guess where I was getting stuck in my head was the low sensitivity of the opioid administration data element in terms of how well that is actually being captured in the electronic health record. And if we're not getting that right, how do we know that we're actually, you know, capturing a harm event that is an actual harm event?
So that problem was a problem of not having an exhaustive list of medications in the adjudication tool, and the naming conventions differing with respect to the adjudicator looking for the exact match for the medication name. And so that was not a reflection of the absence of an opioid in the medical record. It was literally because we created a tool that had a drop-down menu and we were missing some names.
So we really I guess think of that as a lower or a floor, but we don't necessarily know where it actually is. Is that
right? It's higher than that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. All right. Any objection to just going ahead and voting on reliability and validity for this measure? All right, hearing none, please go to the SurveyMonkey and vote on 3501E. Provide your ratings for both reliability and validity. And our next measure is number 3502. This is the hybrid hospital-wide all-condition, all-procedure risk standardized mortality measure. I know we have, I believe, Michael Abrams may be on the call. I think he was going to walk us through this measure. Michael, are you on?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
You can.
Okay,
can you repeat the number again, please?
Okay. So this is measure 3502. You'll find it on page 14 of your PDF. The title is Hybrid Hospital-Wide All Condition, All Procedure Risk Standardized Mortality Measure. So, again, on page 14 of your guide for the committee. This is a new measure. What I'm going to do is actually try to go through all of the specifications and the reliability and validity points directly, and then at the end, save at the end some questions and concerns brought up by you all before moving on to voting. So I'll try to quickly review things and try to anchor you to page numbers on the PDF as well as the points with the emboldened titles there. So starting with the fact that at the very top, this is a new measure, and a brief description of it is that it estimates hospital-level 30-day risk standardized mortality rate, defined as a death from any cause within 30 days after what is referred to as an index admission date for patients who are between the age of 50 to 94. They're referring to this as a hybrid measure. This is the third bullet point down below there. A hybrid measure related to another measure which you reviewed this cycle and you came to consensus on and passed, measure 3504. The difference between this current measure, 3502, and that other measure is that this one uses electronic health records rather than claims. Thus, I guess the reason that they use the term hybrid, because it actually does use some claim-based type information as well, but then gathers lab values and other things from the electronic health record and couples those together, thus creating a hybrid. It's also, the current measure is different than the previous one because it expands the age down to the age of 50. Finally, one point that they do make, which will come up in our discussion, is that there's no empirical validity testing that actually happens with the current measure. Instead, they rely on validity testing that was done on the all claims, that is the non-hybrid measure. There's information for you there about the numerator and the denominator, just to remind you if you want to refer back to that. This measure is referred to, and then jumping down a couple of bullets there, this measure is an outcomes measure, of course, but also the developer has referred to it as an e-measure. This potentially could be problematic with regard to the testing they provided. I'll make those points later. But they are calling it an e-measure principally because it's based on electronic health records. Under the data source bullet there, you can see that we're talking about Kaiser Permanente health records in particular across 21 hospitals, referring to something on the order of 340,000 index admissions that they're referring to in their testing. Next bullet down there, exclusions, just to remind you, they do have a number of exclusions. Discharge against medical advice being the top bullet there under exclusions, and others represented, and you can see, and their argument is that these exclusions were rational, but moreover, quite rare, so shouldn't disturb their results and their analysis that much. The level of analysis now, skipping down to the next bullet, is at the hospital-based level. Just after that, there's a long description that I've provided for you and indeed for myself to remember about the rich risk adjustment models that they proffer there, this Bayesian-Markov Monte Carlo simulation model, and running this model, by the way, across 15 different chronic conditions, or what they refer to as service lines, or what you might think of as clusters of chronic conditions, where they fit their regression models in order to derive their coefficients to then ultimately calculate an expected rate, a risk-adjusted rate for each condition that they would then employ for their risk adjustment model. I'm not going to spend too much time on that other than to say that they do spend a good deal of time describing the details of their sort of case-mixed adjustment that's largely driven by diagnoses. And diagnoses, I might add, that happen as you would hope and expect at the beginning of the admission as opposed to at the discharge, right, so that they're sort of coming up with or quite explicitly coming up with some quantitation for the risk in each of the across each of the 21 hospitals that they would be looking at. Or in this case, it seems they actually applied to their national claims sample only in order to do risk adjustment. And they also took a look at simultaneously and separately. Now I'm well down onto the top of page 15. They took a look at social risk factors of dual, that is Medicare and Medicaid eligibility status, presumably as a proxy for disability, and then HRQ-SES. The short story there was that although they saw significant effects, they weren't as strong as their case mix model, so that involved diagnosis, so they really relied on that. So they proffer this case mix model, which they employ. And then you can see in the middle of page 15, the diagnoses as well as age as a risk factor that they employ for their main risk model. And then farther down in a bulleted list near the bottom of page 15, I should add that they additionally in their risk model employed the electronic health record information they got from Kaiser, the Kaiser EHR record, which added these sort of clinical variables, things like heart rate and oxygen saturation, et cetera. So they did use those. As perhaps you've inferred from my description, there is some confusion potentially about where they deployed these different risk adjusters. They generally argue that they couldn't do full testing in the EHR record because it wasn't nationally representative, and thus they deferred back to the claims-based measure in order to do much of their testing. But that was a little confusing, of course, because they certainly tested their risk model using some EHR data elements. So perhaps the developer can clarify that at some point. Moving on to the top of page 16, just above the bullet that's entitled Ratings for Reliability, you can see there's a description of their bootstrapping samples, and again, a reminder about the different chronic conditions that they looked at individually to define their coefficients. But then the bullet below that indicates that when they did employ the electronic health records, they did an imputation approach using some normalized variables, randomly selected or normalized values for blood pressure and white blood cell count and so forth. That seemed reasonable, although they did disclose that for some of the variables, there was as many as 50% missing laboratory values. So that is something to keep in mind about this measure. Getting now to reliability and validity directly, you all gave reliability a moderate rating. There was no element level testing. That presumably could be okay, as we discussed earlier, because this is a new measure. They deferred instead to split half with adjustment, they say, and looked at an interclass correlation coefficient then at the score level. And that ICC was 0.683, pretty good, unadjusted, without another adjustment that they say that they have employed. And then when they do an adjusted ICC, and it's a little unclear what they mean by that, something about the full year sampling versus the 15-month sampling, presumably, they also see a pretty reasonable ICC, even a bit higher at 0.77. So that's the reliability presentation. I'm gonna move on now, since you all passed that, to the validity points. So we're at the middle of page 16. You all did not pass on that. That's why we're having this discussion now. No element level testing was done, and score level testing was done with only the claims data, and for the other measure that you reviewed, 3504. In fact, it's pretty much that other validity testing that they refer to. So as an example and a reminder to you, they compared the score level testing that they were seeing nationally with their general algorithm for all-cause mortality to nurse-to-bed ratios and to hospital star ratings, and noticed a positive or negative correlation that was you know, consistent with what you might expect in those regards. And they also then referred back to their TEP related to the claims evaluation. So there was sort of a general validity approach that was applied to this measure, as well as looking at it again in a claims-based framework from previous data. And then finally, under validity, of course, they give us the information from the claims data, again, only related to the different levels that hospitals were performing at. That's near the bottom of page 16. And just a reminder to you, the worst hospital was a 3.95% rate, and the best performing hospital at 8.7%, and then they give interquartile ranges as well. We talked about missing data already, so let's move on then to key items of concern related to this measure. And one comes actually from staff, because there is some confusion about whether this is an ECQM measure or not. It has been proffered as such. And so under the items of concern on the bottom of page 16, there's a quote directly from our guidance, which I will direct at the developer. Is the developer on the line for this measure, I should ask?
Yep, we're still here. This is Karen Dorsey from Yale Core. So this is a hybrid measure, not an e-measure. Let me just clarify that right off the bat. I don't know where the e-measure came from. I think it only came from the fact that we submit some information that's similar to what we submit for an e-measure for the data elements that are extracted from the EHR and used in risk adjustment. So it has some elements of an e-measure, but it's a hybrid measure, much like the endorsed hybrid hospital-wide readmission measure that we also developed for CMS.
Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong, and for the benefit of the committee members too, then this measure would not be just automatically deployed. It would be deployed with far more careful scrutiny, much like you would do with a claims measure, cleaning the data, et cetera. Thus, it doesn't need to take the moniker at this point of an e-measure. Is that fair to say?
That is correct. Hybrid measures are all computed by CMS like claims measures are, and have all the data processing that goes along with that.
Very good. Thank you for clarifying that. So then let's move on to issues related to it, just starting with, so the reliability, again, you all passed that. So does the committee have any additional things that they want to discuss at this point regarding reliability, or perhaps we can, if not, then we could move on and just discuss your concerns about validity? All right. So hearing no apparent objections, maybe we'll go on to the validity discourse. That would be, we're on the on page 17 now, big bullet entitled validity. And that first bullet actually is germane only to an e-measure, so we can skip over that. The second bullet there, score and element level testing is required. Score level testing in this case was not done, again, because of this absence of a nationally represented sample for the Kaiser EHR record. The committee want to discuss that in any way, or does anyone on the committee want to get clarification from the developer about that point?
So this is Matt Austin. My understanding is that they either needed to do score-level validity testing or data element validity testing. I don't think both is required.
That's correct from our perspective.
So, sorry, this is Karen. This is the developer. I just have a point of clarification. So we do have face validity assessed for this measure. Is that no longer a qualification sufficient to get you a moderate vote, a moderate rating?
This is a new measure. Am I right about that?
Correct.
So face validity can be acceptable for a new measure. For maintenance measures, we do require empirical validity testing, again, unless there's some acceptable rationale or justification for only having face validity. But for a new measure submission, we do still accept face validity, as you suggested. would only be eligible for a moderate rating on validity, though.
So this is Mike Stoto. It seems to me that you score level testing was done here. I'm not sure I understood, though, that the question that came up about being for the old measure versus the new measure.
Right. Which score level testing was on validity was not done on the with the data from the Kaiser system. It was done with the previous claims approach and did not include the EHR adjustment, for example. Am I correct about that? Does the developer want to clarify that?
We have face validity for both measures.
Measure score,
face validity. And we had empiric validity testing for the claims measure. I think for obvious reasons, we do not have the similar comparative measure that is specific to Kaiser that would lend itself to being able to do empiric score validity testing in such a small and particular sample. But I will also say that the measures are identical except for the addition of the clinical data elements to the risk adjustment.
Uh-huh.
And so we also don't see really a rational reason why the validity testing that we did for the claims measure would not be wholly applicable to the hybrid measure, which basically only has a slight enhancement in the risk model because of the presence of some clinical variables in addition to the risk model that's present for the claims measure.
Understood. Now, can you just clarify, were these extra clinical variables deliberated by your TEP? Was that part of your...
Yes, absolutely. They were presented with the entire measure specification, and I'll say that for the clinical data elements that are used in the hybrid measure, we also have data element validity testing for those. So because they are the same clinical data elements that are used in the NQF-endorsed hybrid hospital-wide readmission measure. So that's already been presented and adjudicated by NQF's committees, and they're the same identical data elements.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Michael, this is Ashley. I think another question to pose to the panel would be, is the developer's representation of the face validity for the measures, is that appropriate? And if the evaluation of the face validity is deemed appropriate, then that rating should be moderate.
Yeah, but
this is Mike again.
I was going to ask the same thing. So since this is a new measure, I understand that face validity, if done appropriately, can be good enough for a moderate score. And then maybe
yes.
The question is, does the empirical testing at the score level that was done, even though it isn't quite the new measure, whether that might actually maybe I don't know whether that can even move it up to moderate to high or not, but maybe that's the best that can be asked for. Is that? Let me restate. My understanding is that since this is a new measure, face validity is enough to give it a moderate rating. That's true, right?
That is correct. Yes, that is correct. This is Ashley from NQF. That is correct.
And then, so maybe we can say then that, now could we say that if we regarded the score level empirical testing, even though it was not exactly on the new measure, that could be an enhancement. Could that move it up to high? Even if we agreed that was an appropriate test, or maybe we can't even get to high by the rules. I don't know.
Hi, Sorry. This is Ashley from NQF. Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong, but in order for a high rating, there has to be both measure score and data element validity testing.
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay, so we couldn't get the high anyway since there was no data element.
Actually, no. I think actually only you could have just score level testing, and that would be enough to make you eligible for a high.
So then the question becomes, do we regard the score level testing of a slightly different measure as close enough to potentially move it up from moderate to high?
Question.
I think, right?
Yes, it's a fair question. This is Michael at NQF talking. So I think it depends on how close the claims are alone to the hybrid, which, you know, as the developer just argued, there's a lot of similarity and overlap. If you are comfortable with that characterization, the more comfortable you are with that characterization, the more likely then that I think you could use your discretion and decide this might exceed a moderate rating. But that's what it hinges upon. You know, so we're talking about comparing 21 hospitals and 340,000 people to, you know, millions of people across several, you know, thousand hospitals, and what the differences might be there, and how that might impact the scientific acceptability of the measure. I want to point out just, I have only one last point that I think is a salient one, for the committee to consider, and that is the imputation point about adding the electronic health records. Remember, some of the variables were missing as many as 50%, that is one half of them were missing, and they ran some imputation with the average values of blood levels or blood pressure levels that they had. Anybody concerned about that? Something that might threaten validity in some way.
So this is Matt Austin. I think I'm the one that made that comment, and maybe others did as well. That was my biggest concern on the validity side, was the, what is the real impact of those missing values? I don't know if the measure developer is able to provide anything else around that topic.
Hi, this is Doris. Oh, sorry, Karen, you go ahead.
No, please.
Sure. I just wanted to clarify where the data were missing. So we have both surgical and non-surgical divisions. So the missingness of the 15 to 50% is limited to lab result values for only the surgical divisions. So there's much less missing data in the non-surgical divisions and for the vitals. So for the surgical divisions missing lab results, we did random imputation within using values within the normal range for that lab. And the reason why we couldn't do any kind of testing regarding the impact of the missing data is that we only have 22 hospitals in this data set, and we thought it would not be very, illustrative as to what the impact would be. Also, let me just provide the rationale for why we used this imputation method. So these surgical patients that are missing initial lab data are more likely to be elective surgical admissions that had labs collected within 30 days prior to admission. So we were less concerned that the patient with an abnormal lab value would undergo elective surgery without having labs checked again.
Yeah.
So we felt it was a reasonable approach for this type of missing data.
Right, and I'll only add that those kinds of decisions were also vetted with our clinical experts and technical experts. So the validity that they put forward reflects that.
Got it. And those points were made in the application. My recollection is Michael speaking at NQF. Are there any other concerns or questions? I think the point of action here is whether or not the committee wants to recast their vote on validity. You had previously passed it on reliability. So have there been any final points or questions that the committee wants to pose to the developer or otherwise?
This is Gina Joe. A quick question to the developer. You state that the measure is restricted to hospitals with at least 100 admissions in that division. And while it doesn't specifically concern our scientific methods panel, I think, but it will be more in the MAP world. Are you concerned about reportability and excluding smaller or rural hospitals in the application of this measure?
Yes, definitely. Let me just pull up my notes here. So the restriction or the exclusion is limited to patients with or divisions, CCSs within divisions with less than 100 hold on a second. So this is principal diagnoses within a CCS, so those, that's the grouper that we use, with fewer than 100 admissions within the measurement year. And we don't think it's going to have a big impact. I don't know if anyone in the development team here for CORE has a has actually the figure for the number that were actually excluded. I think, actually, no, in our form we have that. We have the total number, and it's very, very small. It's like less than 1%, 0.7% or something like that, if I recall correctly. I can pull it up. So based on that level of exclusion, we think that it's not going to have a significant impact on the measure or on the hospitals within that have smaller numbers of patients, that this particular exclusion isn't going to be the issue for smaller hospitals.
Right. And are you also applying this to Kaiser institutions only, or are you suggesting that it could be used more widely?
No, that's an exclusion that's across both measures. The two measures are almost identical, except for the risk adjustment that adds the clinical data elements. So otherwise, the exclusion and inclusion criteria are all the same. So we apply this across the board.
Okay.
Right, and it's an exclusion of that affects more patients included, but not the hospital's ability to receive a measure score. So that's the important thing. Very few hospitals with all of our exclusions that are identical for the claims measure and the hybrid measure, very few hospitals fail to get a score, even with the exclusion that Doris just explained in some detail.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. So any other comments from or questions from the committee, or can we have you move to a vote, a revote on validity? And anything you want to add there, Andrew? Maybe I'll hand it back to you.
Can I ask one more question? Because I just want to, I guess, sort of make sure I vote in the way that is appropriate. Around the missing lab results for the surgical patients, I don't know if I'm asking the right question here, but is there sort of a way to understand if you were to have imputed those values for patients for which you actually did have data, how close or how much do the scores change?
So I think let me just say again that the way that we think about missing data with data that's extracted from the EHR is that almost no matter what kind of data element you're talking about, and here we're talking about highly available data elements on the adult hospitalized population, but you know, the reality is that there's always some missingness, and there are a lot of ways to address missingness, and there's different impacts of different ways. This is the way that we addressed missingness for testing, and I think Doris explained the rationale for that was based on the fact that the patient population for whom those values were missing were largely patients who were getting elective surgery. And so that's the reason why, for testing purposes, based on a clinical rationale that was vetted with our experts, we basically put in normal values for those missing values. You guys know, because you're experts, there's many, many ways that we could address that and perform sensitivity analysis, for example, for in preparation for implementation of such a measure, right? And I think there's a lot of room for stakeholder feedback that tends to happen after development and even through sort of the NCREP process and public comment process. There's a lot of different ways to deal with that, but we rested our initial decision in testing based on what we heard from our clinical experts as the most clinically rational way to approach the missingness as it was specific to that population for whom we did not have lab tests, which were the surgical population. Certainly, for implementation and as we get feedback on this measure, there's an opportunity to look at different mechanisms for doing this and pressure test them a little bit in terms of looking at the differences in score. I'll say that there is really no statistical rationale to think that we're going to see very many differences. We can make much bigger changes in our risk model and see very insignificant bumps, right? in performance and in the hospital level scores. We're playing around the margins here when we talk about whether we're imputing this value or that value. So I just want to make sure you guys sort of understand the full context of how we came to that decision and what we recognize are the limitations of what we put forth, you know, for testing, vis-a-vis the sort of full life cycle of the measures. And, these are issues that appropriately come back to NQF and endorsement maintenance the more we learn about how to approach these things.
Thank you so much. So I guess I have a question for the NQF staff, which is, when we endorse a measure, are we endorsing it with the current imputation approach, or are we endorsing it with that the measure developer will explore different imputation approaches and will figure out which is the best one
thank
to
you
use?
For staying on.
Yeah. So, Mike, the labels here, you're endorsing it as specified, which in this case would be with this imputation approach in the hybrid measure.
Okay, thank you.
Right, but just a point of clarification as a developer, this committee is not actually making an endorsement decision, right? Only a decision
That's
about
correct.
Whether... Right, a decision about whether we've met the criteria for feasibility such that it can go in front of the appropriate
committee. You are correct. Right? This is a methods panel, so they're approving the methods for then to forwarding to a committee that will decide on endorsement or not. That's correct.
Decide on endorsement of the measure as specified.
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
Are we comfortable holding a vote at this point?
I think so.
All right. Hearing no objection, go ahead and enter your votes into the SurveyMonkey, and we will move on to the next measure, which is 3503, hospital harm, severe hypoglycemia. This has a new measure number, but it is actually a maintenance measure. We're trying to work out on the back end how to sort of establish that previous number. This is an E measure, an electronic clinical quality measure. It assesses the proportion of inpatient admissions for patients 18 and older who received at least one antihyperglycemic medication during their hospitalization. And who suffered a hypoglycemic event within 24 hours of the administration of an antihyperglycemic agent.
Can I just check on that last one, 3502, it was only for validity we were voting. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
So for 3503, we did get consensus not reached on both reliability and validity, so we'll need to vote on both of those. This, I think, has pretty similar issues to when we just talked about a couple measures ago. I think it was 3501. We got a score level reliability testing, which, you know, came out with pretty good results, median reliability score of 0.89, roughly, although there was, again, some concern about the sample size there. For validity, similarly, again, we had data element testing, and what the developer had called score-level empirical testing, there was some question, again, whether that might better be classified as data element testing. Maybe we could start with reliability. Again, some concern that only six hospitals were included, which some thought might be an insufficient number to compute reliability. Any discussion about that? Give you a moment to pull up.
So this is Mike Stoto. I think that that might have to do with the issue of how reliability is assessed empirically. So, for instance, if you were doing a kind of retest, I think that 6 would not be anywhere near enough. But the beta binomial really is looking at whether or not the differences among the units that you have are essentially different compared to the noise. So I think that the number of units is far less important for this beta binomial approach, if I understand that correctly. I wonder if others agree.
Thanks, Michael. Any other comments on that? Do you agree with Michael about that?
So this is Matt. I don't really have enough experience to agree or disagree.
You know, this is what the subgroup that's writing the paper about reliability assessment methods and so on, I think we'll be addressing, but they haven't done it yet, of course.
With that said, are comfortable taking a revote on reliability? Anybody have any additional thoughts or comments or questions for the developer? All right, hearing what, none, let's move on to validity. Again, here's some concern about the sample size used in testing and whether that was sufficient to determine validity. Some concern about the developer's rationale for not risk adjusting and whether there might be a need for additional data to support this decision. Again, you have the sort of question about whether you would consider this to be score level testing or data element level validity testing, which would only implicate the whether this was eligible for a moderate or a high, not a pass, no pass decision. Go ahead, Matt.
I don't know if this is the right place to provide this feedback, but is there somewhere documented? So nothing I saw, I guess it's not until this afternoon that I'm understanding that this is actually a maintenance measure.
Yeah, apologies for that. That's sort of a...
So that thrown me just a little bit, as I know I'm trying to go back through my notes and figure out. It looks like they did do empirical validity testing of the score and the data elements. So I'm just trying to go back through that information.
Again, I think it's kind of similar to one we discussed a couple of measures ago where they did they got, you know, sensitivity, specificity, and PPV, NPV around that sort of core question of the adverse event. And there's maybe some debate over whether that constitutes score level or data element level validity. I think, again, at NQF, we would typically expect score level validity to be an assessment of that rolled up score at the level of the facility or whatever entity is being assessed.
Thank you.
This is Gene. I'm a little concerned about the overall purpose of the measure. In their validity section, they talk about testing 6 hospitals, and there are in their 2 beta tests, there were about 175 encounters, meaning that each of these 6 hospitals only had about 30 encounters each over a period of, I presume, 12 months. I understand these are clearly kind of low prevalence events. They certainly could be serious. I'm wondering if these are more process measures than outcome measures. That is, we have a case of, you know, these 6 hospitals having 30 events, and about a little more than half the time they're having events with harm, and about half the time they're having events without harm. Maybe I'm just thinking of a MAP member. Is this something that we should be concerned about measuring, or is it, you know, just kind of a low incident kind of event that we understand the issue, but we're trying to capture something that's a rare event.
This is Matt Austin. That's an interesting thought, because as I reread the denominator and numerator statement, the denominator are basically patients who received a anti-hyperglycemic medication during their hospital stay, and the numerator are those who had a test for blood glucose less than 40. So that's, to me, that's not necessarily a process, because I'm not sure what the process is that we're measuring. To me, the outcome that's being measured is, for patients who received a high anti-hyperglycemic agent, did their blood glucose fall?
Yeah, this is Mike Soto. I agree. That seems like an outcome to me, too, that the glucose level was low.
It did what it's supposed to do.
Right. I mean, you would only know that if you did the test, but of course that's true for many outcomes.
Yeah.
This is Lisa Suter from the Measure Developer. Would it be helpful to have some clarification? I don't want to speak if not helpful.
Sure, I think that would be.
So certainly the capturing of hypoglycemia, and this measure is actually paired with a hyperglycemia measure that is not in front of MQF at this time. That is dependent on the hospital capturing glucose. So there is a fundamental need to capture that. Although I would posit that glycemic testing is probably the most commonly performed laboratory testing in hospitalized patients. And there's, I think, pretty universal testing, and we focus on a denominator of patients that are at risk for these kinds of events, and therefore they have diabetes or they are on an anti-diabetic hypoglycemic agent. So we are focused on a population that is theoretically at risk. They are, there is a possibility that there are patients that may have severe hypoglycemia that had no glucose level checked, and we are missing those. Our clinical experts and technical expert panel felt that, as well as some additional endocrinology experts, felt that this was capturing the critical outcome of hypoglycemic events, severe hypoglycemic events. 40 is a much lower threshold for severe hypoglycemia. So I think, you know, while there may be an extraordinarily rare case that is missed because the hospital is not monitoring a patient on hypoglycemic agents appropriately, our clinicians felt that universally that this would not be a reason not to endorse the measure for face validity, as we do have face validity, although I know that's not adequate for maintenance. We have face validity to add to whether you define it as a measure score or a data element of validity.
Any comments from our panel members or discussion? Are we comfortable going ahead with a vote on this?
I think so.
All right, let's go ahead and re-vote on reliability and validity. And one more measure, I think we can at least start it. Maybe we can get through. More than one measure. So the next one is hospital 3498E, hospital harm pressure injury. We have a high rating for liability on this one, but a consensus not reached rating for validity. Again, very similar analysis done here for validity. Again, depending on whether you would classify what they did as score level or data element level, may be eligible for a high or moderate for validity. But for this one, there was some concern among reviewers about weak validity results in one of the tested data sets. And reviewers suggested that inconsistent use of structured fields in EHRs does raise concern in this instance about data quality and documentation practices. Also some concern with the decision not to risk adjust or stratify reported results. So any, I don't know if you've finished with your voting on the last one. Again, just to remind you, this is 3498E. This is an electronic clinical quality measure which assesses the proportion of inpatient admissions for patients 18 and older who develop a new stage 2, 3, or 4 pressure injury, deep tissue pressure injury, or unstageable pressure injury during hospitalization. Any discussion about the validity results here?
Yes, so this is Matt. I did vote low because I did have some concerns with the inconsistent use of structured fields and the identification of hospital-acquired pressure ulcers. I'm going back through my notes to
see
exactly if I can find any more detail. But that was my biggest concern was, if hospitals aren't actually using structured fields to document pressure ulcers, are we getting a false signal of what the problem is? And I guess it's table 5 that brought my attention to it, where they compared the electronic EHR extraction, the manual chart abstraction, and had a PPV of 68.4% in one data set and 44.9% in the other.
Any other thoughts from our other panel members about that? Or I don't know if our developers have any comment on that, those low results in the that one data set.
This is Nicole from the measure development side, from Yale Core. I just want to make a quick clarification that while you're right, the PPV is lower at some of the test sites. The hospitals were actually using the structured fields to capture pressure injuries. They just weren't doing it consistently within the first 24 hours, which is why a lot of them show up as new pressure injuries in the EHR, and then once we validate it, it turns out they were actually there, but they were written down in unstructured fields. So eventually they were being documented in structured fields. It just wasn't within the first 24 hours.
Capability. My understanding correctly that they would be miscategorized then, right, by your measure because it would show them as being hospital-acquired when they weren't being hospital-acquired?
Correct.
Okay. So we would potentially be overstating a hospital's performance in that area.
Correct, until documentation practices change.
Does the measure
I just want to add that we actually discussed this pretty extensively with our technical expert panel, and actually was a discussion that came up at the MAP as well. So I think you are characterizing it absolutely correctly that if there's not adequate documentation that an injury was present on admission or present in those first 24 hours, that a hospital that failed to document appropriately would be charged with a harm in that case. But our technical expert panel and some members of the MAP committee, pretty consistently the feedback that we've gotten is that that kind of problematic documentation is legitimately part of the quality signal, meaning that if hospitals are not accurately documenting these kinds of fundamental aspects of the presence of pressure injuries, they can't adequately track their progression, they can't communicate shift to shift among the nursing staff appropriately, and that being penalized for that kind of sloppy documentation is appropriate. And so that was explicitly discussed when the technical expert panel provided their vote on the face validity of this measure, which they endorsed.
Right, I guess to me, this is Matt Austin, it just comes down to, I would agree that there's obviously a quality issue that this measure is addressing. It's just, it doesn't really help identify if the quality issue is documentation or if the quality issue is management of patient's skin.
Right, and it's really both initially, right, because the documentation does come up as an indicated harm. And like most of the quality measures that we've developed for CMS, if we are providing hospitals with sort of valid information about quality, and in this case whether that's, purely about the acquisition of pressure injury or a mix of information about the acquisition of pressure injury and problems that they're having with appropriate documentation that gets reflected in their rate, that all of that is valuable and actionable information for the hospital that they need and will benefit from in terms of focusing efforts on improving quality in that area. And I think that's what we heard from our technical experts. I will say that it is true that, a complete failure to document is an approach to game. I think that that's really an implementation issue for CMS to consider and address. So I would put that in the implementation bucket and something that certainly when the measures come back for maintenance of endorsement and the committee considers some of these implementation issues, should be a matter for discussion. But in the short term, you know, we think that that rate reflects important quality information for a hospital to have, even though that's a mix of information about the quality of their documentation and the quality of skin care.
I think that can be summarized by the method drives improvement. Measure, I mean.
Any other discussion on validity? Or reliability? I think we have to take a vote on both.
According to the notes, it says that reliability is high because there were three highs, one moderate, and one low.
Did I get that wrong? You may be right.
20, okay.
Page 20.
All right, sorry. Yes, you're right. Sorry about that. So just validity. Have we had enough discussion that you feel comfortable to re-voting on validity? Hearing no objections, we'll ask that you go ahead and enter your vote, your rating on validity in the SurveyMonkey, and I think that will probably wrap up our call for today. We're just a little bit past the hour. As Miranda mentioned earlier, we have a follow-up call on Thursday, 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. So we do have one more measure to address, and that hopefully will be a fairly brief call, but we'd ask you to attend that call as well. And if there's nothing else from any of our panel members, we'll let you go. Any final comments or thoughts?
No.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate your time. Talk to you.